How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. Weren't here last week, but we're back. Brand new show. We got 2 weeks worth of stuff to talk about. So much news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we head towards WrestleMania. Coming up in just over 3 weeks, in fact, I think exactly 3 weeks, WrestleMania is here. Miami, Florida, I'll be heading down for the show. I'm going to talk about that event, some new matches, some changes to the show. We'll talk about The Rock versus John Cena, their big what have you. I don't even know what to call it on Monday. They had a promo battle that centered around wrist notes. That's right. We'll talk about that. What do people backstage think about this? What do people think afterwards? Did people care the next day? We're going to talk a lot about wrist notes here on this show. And all of the matches leading into WrestleMania. We've got TV as well. TNA, SmackDown. I went to the live SmackDown in Seattle this past Tuesday night. We'll talk about that show as well. And, of course, Rowdy Ronda Rousey has taken home her eighth arm in eight fights. As I predicted, fight did not go 1 minute, but it did go less than one round. Ronda Rousey armbarred Miesha Tate, who would not quit. She actually had her in two armbars. The first was in under 1 minute, and had the referee stopped it, the streak would have continued. But referee didn't stop it, and Miesha survived to get armbarred later in the fight. And as it turned out, quite the controversial armbar in the sense that the arm was virtually turned inside out and backwards. Nobody threw in a towel. Nobody stopped the fight. The ref just stood there until Miesha finally was forced to tap. It was probably the most gruesome armbar in the history of mixed martial arts. We're going to talk about that. Plus, the rest of the show, a great Strikeforce show last night. Two great women's matches on the show. Also talk about UFC on FX from Friday night, which, quite frankly, was far less anticipated than the women on Saturday night, and so much more. Tons of stuff to talk about today. We'll be back after the first break talking more Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts that is booked like pro wrestling. That, in fact, is the top story of the week. I know that some people are going to beg us to talk about The Rock versus John Cena. That is coming up here after a while. But last night's Tate versus Rousey show, the second biggest fight in the history of women's mixed martial arts, number one obviously being Chris Cyborg versus Gina Carano, which took place in San Jose. I was there live for that show. An unbelievable crowd. Unbelievable crowd. Unbelievable fight. Unbelievable atmosphere. And Columbus, Ohio didn't quite come close to selling out, quite frankly. But it was Columbus, Ohio. And I know that among my friends and among people I talk to, and if you go to the poll on the front page of our website, this was by far the most anticipated show of the weekend. Significantly more interest in this show than in the UFC on FX show that took place on Friday night. And as far as a fight that was built up well by both girls, great twists and turns, unbooked twists and turns, by the way. This is not something that some wrestling booker thought up. This was real life. A bunch of twists and turns leading to an incident at the pre-show weigh-in, a headbutt, Miesha Tate called it. What actually happened was after weighing in, they stared each other down, and Miesha went forehead to forehead with Rousey, and so Rousey bowled her backwards with her head. Miesha claimed it was a headbutt, and apparently attempted to get Rousey fined. Rousey was not happy. She was not happy. She went in and basically mauled Miesha Tate. Miesha Tate at some points during the grappling had the advantage. She had her back at one point. But overall, Ronda Rousey on the ground, absolutely incredible. She armbarred Miesha Tate to the point that I'm not sure if her arm is ever going to be the same again. She won the title. Earlier in the show, there had been an awesome video package with Ronda talking about how her father, who died when she was 8 years old, before he died, told her that someday she would be a world champion. And at the time, they thought it would be for swimming. Later, she went into judo. Later, she quit judo, went into mixed martial arts. And here she is today, a world champion. As far as a story from start to finish, hasn't been anything like this in a long time. And it was awesome. Mike, what did you think?
It was incredible. I mean, this was, you know, you have to actually have the two people and everything's got to fall right. But you put the right people in the right position, and they took Sarah Kaufman out of this fight. They put Ronda Rousey in, which all of a sudden, right away, you have a instant storyline there. And then with the way Rousey carried herself and the way she was able to get under Tate's skin, I mean, from the first photo shoot that they did and released those pictures with them in the dresses, the cocktail dresses, all the way through the end of the fight, forget even about the fight and that gruesome armbar, but afterwards where Tate's not selling the fact that her arm was basically, I mean, as unnatural as you could possibly get, as nasty as it could possibly get if you have not seen this thing, be aware that you will, you know, don't eat lunch before you see it because it was that brutal. But Tate not selling it, standing there, and you know she's got to be in excruciating pain, and she's just saying, yeah, it's only a little hurt, and, you know, it only hurts a little bit, and she's not even selling it, and Rousey continuing on with the feud because of finding out that Tate tried to get her fined, and how she carried herself after that and building herself up for the fight coming up with Kaufman. Everything felt perfectly right for this, and I mean, God bless them. They did an incredible job, and, you know, you can't book real life like this, but, you know, WWE could put guys in positions like this and let things like this play out again because that's what always made wrestling, and I know people hate hearing that example, but Ronda Rousey is about as pro wrestling as you can get as far as a character goes. I mean, people talk about Sonnen, but the way she carries herself and builds herself, I'm not saying it's Muhammad Ali-like, but you can see where there is charisma. You can see where there is just something special about Ronda Rousey. And lucky for her, because of the division, she does actually have opponents to take her on for a little while.
Her mentor is Judo Jean LaBelle.
I wonder if the stopwatch kept going because this didn't go a minute.
It had to have. Long-time worker. It's the best term I can use. Long-time, lifelong worker, Judo Jean LaBelle. And he's the guy there and in her corner, mentoring her and showing her the way to talk her way into a title shot. She won the title, and she is making a lot of money. A hell of a lot of money. And I want everyone to stand up and put your arm out like you're hitchhiking. You know, put your arm out to the side. Kind of your arm's a little bit bent, and your thumb's up, and you're hitchhiking. Now, imagine that, except your arm is bent the wrong way at 45 degrees, and then after it's bent the wrong way at 45 degrees, bend it 45 degrees the other wrong way. That's the position that this arm was in last night. And I was watching with my buddy Craig, who's 320 pounds, and my buddy Tony, who at one point was 240 pounds, he's lost some weight. My buddy Rich, who is 270 pounds. I got a lot of big friends. And if you add me into the mix, there was 1,000 pounds of manhood upstairs. Maybe that was the wrong word. But 1,000 pounds of man upstairs watching this show at Tony's house. And you never seen 1,000 pounds of man just shriek in horror at what we were witnessing on the screen. And I got to say, watch a lot of fighting, but I have never seen tougher human beings than the girls on this show last night. Misha Tate not tapping for this armbar, and then Sarah Kaufman and Alexis Davis just beat the piss out of each other earlier on in the show. They had a shot of Sarah Kaufman watching the main event, and her face is just like, it's just, she did take it such a beating, and she had beaten the hell out of Alexis Davis for two straight rounds. And then Alexis Davis made this huge comeback. And in the third round, I didn't give it a 10-8. But had I given it a 10-8, and it could be argued, I guess. But if you'd given that third round a 10-8, that fight was a draw. Those are two tough women. Tough people. Forget women. Those are two tough people. The women on this show were the four toughest people on this show, period. It was an amazing night for women's mixed martial arts. Dana White, unfortunately, was in Australia. I don't think he saw the show. I know he was very excited about the fight. I know that he was very disappointed with Showtime. He cut a promo in Australia about Showtime. He's done. For those of you that a couple of weeks ago had heard that Dana was all excited that now he'd been given control over Strikeforce and he was going to be hands-on and everything, well, that lasted about 2 weeks. He had ideas for this show. They told him no, so he said, well, screw it. Do your own show. Have your own goofball produce this show. I'm done. I got more important things to do. So I don't think he watched it, which is unfortunate, because Dana White needs to do something with Ronda Rousey, like, right now. He needs to do everything in his power to get her on every single solitary show he possibly can. He needs to provide this footage to everybody. She has a chance to be, like, a huge, big-time mainstream star for mixed martial arts from an MMA perspective. You know, she's not going to be Elvis or anything like that, but I mean, as far as like a sports star from a somewhat still fringe sport, Ronda Rousey has more potential than almost anybody in mixed martial arts right now. Some would actually say anybody. So something needs to be done with her immediately, because now's the time before she has to face Sarah Kaufman, quite frankly.
Well, you won't get that chance, obviously, because he's going to be facing Kaufman pretty soon. Although, if you looked at Kaufman's face and you looked at Rousey, you know, I cannot wait. I didn't get a chance to see that Kaufman fight, but I mean, from what everybody says, it was completely awesome. And, you know, her stand-up, I mean, this is where we're lucky right now. After Cyborg and Carano, we had that long delay because there was nobody else to really fill the void till we got Conan facing off against Cyborg. But, you know, at least this way, even after Kaufman, there's still a couple fights left for Rousey, so we could be seeing her for a while. And much like those WEC guys, you know, you can't poo-poo the women's division. You need to take advantage of the fact when you can get fights like this. And who cares if they're not deep divisions? Take advantage of these things, because people will buy into them. Because look at how great last night was.
At this point, we don't have an update on Miesha Tate's arm, but she claimed it. She had a line of something like, it hurts a little bit or something like that. I can't remember what she said. She totally downplayed it. But this, I mean, this could have been serious, permanent, long-term damage to the arm. That's how bad this was. I don't know. We shall see. But I guess her recovery will determine when she gets another chance to get in there. We'll talk more about this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking Tate versus Rousey last night. Pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 2 hours. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. State of Miesha's arm, I guess we'll find out in the next couple of days. There's a bunch of footage up on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com. If you're listening to this right now and you have not seen the fight highlights or Ronda Rousey's post-fight promo, head over to WrestlingObserver.com. You can check it out. We've got the videos up on the front page of the website. And there's something to see. After the fight, Rousey was asked about Miesha Tate. You know, what do you think now after the fight's over? Do you respect her? And Rousey, who, as noted, was in an extremely bad mood as a result of the headbutting fine incident. And in fact, at one point earlier in the show, when Heidi Andral, the interviewer, asked her, "Are you a one-trick pony?" which has to be up there with some of the stupidest questions in the history of mixed martial arts, Rousey shot her a look filled with daggers, freshly sharpened daggers, right into Heidi Andral. And I thought, there's a fight I'd pay $25 for. But regardless, she, after the fight, was asked about Miesha, and she said, "I respect her, but I don't feel bad about it." She was still upset. She didn't do the old, "We just talk trash to build up the fight." Nope. She was still mad. And I actually expected some fallout from this, because I know there are a lot of people on MMA sites that all they want in this sport is good sportsmanship and everybody to be friends and competitors. But as she buried Miesha after she destroyed her arm, everybody in attendance cheered. And I thought, wow, those people are into some reality here. So, or whatever it was last night. But hell of a post-fight promo there. And a great fight, and just as noted earlier, a great overall entertainment package. Maybe entertainment is the wrong word, because I was not entertained seeing that arm twisted inside out and backwards. But the whole package was a hell of a story.
Oh my God, yeah. And I was in Newark to see the GSP Dan Hardy fight, and watching GSP, you know, work on the arm and then, you know, hold himself off. And there were people that bashed GSP for being too sporting and that he should have taken that arm home. Well, you know, I wish Ronda would have just, you know, taken the arm down the street, not all the way home like she did. But, you know, hey, she tried to take food out of her mouth.
Yeah, but let me say one thing. Let me say one thing real quick about that. I know what you're saying, but at the same time, Ronda Rousey had an armbar. I forget who it was a couple of fights back, and she let go of the armbar, and the other girl claimed she had not submitted.
Yes, that's
and so
right.
Rousey had to go and put the armbar back on. So there's a reason they tell you do not stop until the referee. I don't blame Ronda one bit for this. I do blame the referee. I don't know what the referee was thinking. I don't know. This was like a pride official here saying, if I stop this fight, I may be in big trouble. I got to let this thing go until somebody taps.
Well,
it's his
was
fault.
The pride mentality.
Yeah. But
you know,
it's not Ronda's fault.
That's where Tate deserves, and I'm not saying deserves, she takes her blame, you know, share the responsibility in that, you know, because of her pride and because not wanting to give Rousey the satisfaction. I mean, it looked at first like she did not tap. At the very end when they showed a close-up, it looked like she tapped right as the referee was going to jump in and finally stop it anyway because of the shape of that arm. But, I mean, you know, she does shoulder a little bit of the blame here because what else could Ronda Rousey do?
Yeah, it was a hell of a show. You saw the Strikeforce event but not the prelims, is that correct?
Yeah, so I missed a lot of the excitement that took place. Yeah, you know, if Dana in one way should be very happy over the fact that, you know, he was in Australia for the Strikeforce show. I mean, one, the fact that the show was so well hyped and because the main event delivered in the way that it did, you know, it takes all the attention away from the fact it was a pretty flat FX2 show and, you know, the controversy on there. It gives at least a smiley face to the weekend. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure Dana's not happy with some of the things that went down in the beginnings.
Couple of quick notes. Ryan Couture beat Connor Hewn. Couture looked awesome. Got Connor's back and tapped him out. Actually, didn't tap him out. The referee stopped it. I made that mistake twice in the last 2 days. Referee stopped it after a series of unanswered blows from the back. Couture's been training with his father, who has had some time off due to movie commitments. And so, or a lack of movie commitments, actually, at this point. So he helped train his son, and there was a lot of Randy and Ryan last night. A lot of good, strong clinching against the fence. Couture's grappling, his jiu-jitsu, better than his father's. He's been training pure jiu-jitsu for a long time, and Connor Hewn, renowned grappler, very good grappler, but Couture just out-grappled him and beat him. So a big win for Ryan Couture in that fight. We had Pat Healy beating Carlos Fodor in an upset. Healy looked really good in this fight. Finish was awesome as Fodor went for a heel hook. And Healy, in escaping, this was not escape and then perform a maneuver. While escaping, he clamped on a side choke, got the submission. It was awesome. Roger Bowling beat Brandon Sailing. Sailing taking this fight on short notice. Self-trained. Had a lot of potential, but it will be unrealized potential as it came out after the fight. A neo-Nazi, a registered sex offender, accused of sexual relations with a person under the age of 13, and I believe a domestic violence. I believe he was arrested for domestic violence as well in 2008. Regardless, a record that I'm not sure how. The only conclusion I could come to is it's Strikeforce. That's how this was not discovered prior to him actually getting in the cage. Especially you took one look at him, and throughout the fight, everybody else in the room with me was like, look at those tattoos. Those are Nazi tattoos. And I was like, did this guy not take off his shirt a single time before this fight for Strikeforce to look at him and go, hold on a second. So anyway, that's the last you'll see of Brandon Sailing. Investigation into whatever happened here starting on Monday. Alexis Davis, Sarah Kaufman, as noted, was an awesome battle. Kaufman beat her up the first two rounds, and then Davis made this huge comeback in the third round. And one judge gave the fight a draw. Somehow he gave the second round 9-9 or 10-10, whatever even is, if you call the fight a draw. And the other two judges had it for Kaufman, so she wins and is in line for a shot against Ronda Rousey. Jacare Souza beat Bristol Marooned in a fun fight. A lot of very athletic maneuvers on the part of Jacare. He did some awesome spinning kicks, some wild stand-up. Virtually a run-up-the-cage back take at one point, and finally got the tap with another side choke. He looked great during this fight, although they did announce that it's probably going to be Tim Kennedy versus Luke Rockhold next, as opposed to Rockhold versus Jacare. Rockhold beat him for the title in a very close fight. What are your thoughts on that fight and the decision as to giving Tim Kennedy the next title shot?
Yeah, I think that makes sense, and I'm completely fine with that because the winner will end up getting Jacare anyway, so you know, extends it out. So I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. And as good as Jacare looked, you know, I was really impressed with Marunde, who at least his moxie and his stick-to-itiveness, because he was completely outclassed. But he kept finding a way to survive, and he was, you know, would get rocked with a shot, but still able to, you know, have his presence of mind. So hopefully we get to see him again, get another chance in Showtime, because I know he was a late replacement too.
We had Scott Smith and Lumumba Sayers. Scott Smith, done. Not much else to say about that.
Old 32. Very old.
Too many beatings. We had Paul Daly and Kazuo Misaki, which, how'd you score that fight? I had this fight easily for Misaki. Paul Daly acted like this was like the biggest robbery in the history of heists. What did you think?
I had Misaki 30-27, and I don't, you know, Daly got a gift, you know, after he was donked off after the Koscheck incident, you know, and he goes over to the strike force against Nick Diaz. You know, he had the opportunity to have a second chance with the UFC, and I, you know, especially in the third round too, where he didn't turn an eye. I mean, I cannot believe that his corner was telling him, or he was actually believing that he was coasting that well, that he didn't need to put on more pressure in the third round. And even though he busted Misaki open, and that was nasty and all that, I mean, that was more aesthetic than anything. So, I mean, him acting like he was, you know, robbed at gunpoint is just completely ridiculous.
And, of course, we had KJ Nunes and Josh Thompson. Nunes essentially wanted to fight standing. Thompson took him down. Nunes was desperate to get up, so Thompson held him down so he couldn't get up. About three rounds of this, Thompson admitted the fight was awful. He used a much stronger word than that. Said he got tired, bad conditioning, had gotten staffed twice during camp, and so he couldn't train to his full potential. Nunes, as he's being held down, is visibly rolling his eyes at the camera, at which point I wanted the referee to bring in thick, heavy rope and tie KJ Nunes from head to toe and let Josh Thompson go to work. If you don't like being on the ground, then get up. If you can't, don't roll your eyes. It's your fault, not the other guy. That is the most infuriating thing. If you don't like going to the ground, then don't do mixed martial arts. Do kickboxing or do boxing. Don't blame the other guy for holding you down. Just get up, which he could not do.
Although, Brian, in a way, he is right. You can blame the other guy in the fact that, you know what, if you don't want to get staffed twice, clean your mats or whatever it is, and yes, an excuse is an excuse, but, you know, you kept repeating over and over, you know how bad his fight was. He kept saying it over and over, and you know what, yeah, sorry you had staff, but, you know, that he didn't do much to hype that fight either, and, you know, it was truly a popcorn match leading into the main event because, I mean, once Daly and Misaki was over, I had no care about seeing Thompson and Nunes. I know they had one great fight, but I wanted to get right to the main event.
Work on the ground, then. So if you can't get up, you could try something, as opposed to
eye rolling. How long has Nunes been fighting now? How long has he been fighting?
Long enough to not roll his eyes when he's held down, in my opinion.
Mm.
Let's head to a break. Back in just a moment. A lot of stuff to talk about today. You've got to get going. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com, your one-stop shop for pro wrestling and MMA. We do so much audio. If you love this show and you only get to hear it one time per week on Sports Byline USA, XM Radio, Sirius Satellite Radio, or streaming live worldwide here on the internet, you are missing out. Dave Meltzer and I were up for an hour last night talking Tate versus Rousey and all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were up twice the day before as well. We had a special show covering the death of Doug Furniss. We'll talk about more of that later on in this program as well. Plus, we talked about the UFC on FX show, which we'll talk about here. We do shows virtually every single day. In fact, some days I do as many as four shows in a single day. All the quality of the one you're listening to right now, audio-wise, are MP3s you can download to your iPod, iPad, iPhone, Android, whatever your listening device is. Listen to them in the car. Listen to them while you're at the gym. Listen to them out on a walk. You'll never run out of wrestling audio. Because even if I do a show, and you listen to the whole show, and you've got nothing else new to listen to, you can jump into the archives and listen to every show we have done dating back to 2005. Tens of thousands of hours of audio available in the archives for you right now if you sign up. It's only $10.99 a month. $10.99 a month. Sign up. If you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. Plus the website, Wrestling Observer Newsletter every single week. Figure Four Weekly every single week. Back issue of The Observer every single week. Not to mention all of the news every single day. TV reviews. We've got tons of videos up there every single day as well. Keep up with what's going on in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts without actually watching the shows. Just watch the videos. They're up in the video section on the website. Head up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. I guarantee, I've said this a million times, if you love this show that you're listening to right now, I guarantee you will love your subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. And if you don't, email me and we'll figure something out. But I don't ever get those emails. You'll love it. Trust me. UFC on FX. You only watched one of the fights so far, Mike. The Ian McCall fight with Demetrius Johnson, which was the subject of much controversy. Talk about what happened in your fight, your thoughts on that fight.
Well, it was a really close fight, and, you know, Demetrius Johnson, who I liked a lot, I was really happy in the fact that they opened up the 125-pound division. You know, I was always a big fan in boxing at the lighter weight divisions. I mean, you get some guys with great knockouts, but, you know, more than that, for what you get are great action fights. And you got a guy like Johnson who throws an incredible amount of punches and strikes per round, punches and kicks, and he did the same thing here against Ian McCall, who not a whole lot of people really gave a whole lot of credit to going into this because of Johnson coming down in weight and this being a natural spot for him. He was one of the favorites to win this flyweight tournament. And they have this three-round fight, and obviously because it's a tournament, if the fight ends in a draw, then they're going to go on to a bonus round to see who wins. Griffin and Bonner, I believe, did. So they have a really action-packed fight, and to me, there's not a whole lot of controversy because I thought McCall won. I thought he won the first round, and I thought he won the third round, clearly, borderline 10-8, but I gave it to him 10-9. Now, when the decision was announced, they said we have a split decision. The first card went 29-28 to McCall. The second went 29-28 to Johnson. And then it was announced that Sal D'Amato, the judge, gave the last round or gave the 29-28 to Johnson, which led to McCall storming out, just ripping his hand away from the referee and walking out of the building. Now, Johnson wins the fight. The crowd is booing. They're upset. They go to the back. They find out that the scorecards were actually totaled up wrong, and D'Amato actually gave McCall the third round 10-8, and it should have been a majority draw. So Dana White's head has got to be exploding at this point because you have a complete wrench in the flyweight tournament. It was too late to get these guys back into the ring again. It was just this stupid mistake, which now throws a wrench into things, and now you have to rush these two guys back to get them in to try to keep things on schedule to continue on with the tournament. And as a longtime boxing fan, I had to laugh because I remember doing the PPH show in like 2003, and there were people that would say, you know, MMA fans who would make fun of boxing, and they saw the ascension of MMA and said, you know what, this type of stuff would never happen in our sport. You know what, when it comes to commissions and judges, time and time again, you cannot hold this on the UFC or on anybody else, and you can get as frustrated about it as you want. it's one of those things that until there's a massive change is always going to take place in a canvas matted sport.
You know, the commissioner came out and he was saying, it's my fault. It's my fault. It's not Sal D'Amato's fault. It's my fault. I added wrong. I take full responsibility. Don't blame Sal. And all that's great and everything like that. It's good to, you know, if you mess up, you know, take credit for it and everything like that. But why didn't Sal D'Amato stand up immediately and say, hold on a second, that's not what my card said? Where was Sal D'Amato? You know what I mean? Where was he at? Because they didn't even figure out that this was a screw-up until at the press conference. Where was Sal D'Amato for like 3 hours? What was he doing? You know, this is Sal D'Amato's fault, actually. Yeah, the commissioner added wrong and everything like that. But, you know, if you're sitting there as a judge and you're hanging out and they go, referee Sal D'Amato calls his fight for Johnson, I'd be like, hold on, what? Raise my hand. Wait, that's not what I said. Here's my card. And then you go, oh, well, you know, it was a mistake. In fact, it's a draw. Guys, get back in here for round four. That was the most baffling thing to me is, you know, where was not just Sal D'Amato, like, immediately after when they read the score? Because, you know, maybe I'm a judge and I score the fight a draw and they go, and Judge Brian Alvarez scores it for Demetrius Johnson. And maybe at that point, like, instantly I'd be, like, baffled. Like, hold on a second. Did I really? What happened here? And maybe I'd be looking back and forth and trying to figure out what's going on. And then by the time the guys are out of the cage, then maybe, you know, where was he, like, 5 minutes later? Where was he 10 minutes later? Where was he 15 minutes later? Why did, I mean, as far as I know, he's not even the guy that told everybody the press conference. Sal D'Amato?
He's still got fights to score. It's out of his hands. And it's been a long time since I read any state commission rules and everything, and I'd have to go back to do it. But it goes over to the commissioner. And, yes, you can ask this question over and over again, but it's happened in boxing forever. And, again, this is only 3 rounds. I mean, they screw it up in 10 and 12 rounds is ridiculous enough. The fact that it's screwed up with 3 rounds is even more mind-boggling. But it's out of his hands. It goes to the commission. And, yes, they have the ability to stop it right there and go, whoa, 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 no, wait, we screwed up. But for whatever reason, they don't, and they make this, they draw it out. They have to, wait, we got to see what happens here, and are we going to overturn the decision? We better talk on Monday. And I don't know if it's because they're scared to damage the integrity of the show while it's going on and saying, hey, we screwed up, and to announce it then. Why they waited till so long after the fights were over that it took this long to get out, I have no idea, but I don't know. You could bang your head up against the wall about this, and people do, and you'll see it in boxing all the time, and it's one of the reasons that people, you know, hate boxing is because of things like this. So, unfortunately, even though it's wrong, you got to expect it to happen in the UFC, even though, again, it's 3 rounds. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Also on the show in the flyweight tournament, Joseph Benavidez, Yasuhiro Urshitani had a, Benavidez destroyed him. Let's be honest.
He's a beast.
Won the first round.
He's a beast at this weight.
11-second knockout in the second round. An easy favorite. It was kind of funny, actually. I didn't do the picks here. I haven't been doing picks lately. I'm a bad contributor to the website sometimes.
Scared.
I was interested when I saw people totally blown off Ian McCall. I was like, you know, I realize that most people have never even heard of Ian McCall, and I believe that, obviously, of the two, Demetrius Johnson is the bigger name, but blowing off Ian McCall, I don't know about that. He's a good fighter, and he looked good in the fight. I mean, the third round, I actually had it a draw as well. I gave Johnson the first two, and I gave Ian McCall the third round 10-8. I thought Ian McCall did great in that fight. And Demetrius Johnson, he didn't look so good, really. I should say he didn't look good. He didn't look as good at 125 as he did at 135, I thought. And Ian McCall, you know, if he wins, he could beat Demetrius Johnson in the rematch. And he might give Joseph Benavidez a good fight. But regardless, Benavidez going to the finals. They're going to do a rematch of Johnson-McCall at some point down the road, hopefully April, and get that final taking place later on this summer. But
you know, there's always going to be dominant champions and guys who are the cream of the top in the division. But it could be one of those any given Sunday situations, like some of the WEC shows were, obviously, with guys at this weight, too, where you're just going to get surprise, incredibly exciting fights.
Main event of the show, Thiago Alves, who put on approximately 30 pounds in a matter of 6-7 hours after weighing in, because weight cutting is ridiculous. He went in there, and despite his weight cut, still got tapped out by Martin Kampmann in the third round of their fight. Guillotine choke. Kampmann looked good. Alves looked pretty good, but I have no respect for the guys that put on 30 pounds after weigh-ins. I just don't. I'm sorry. You know?
You're still upset over Frankie, aren't you?
Actually, no, because I had no problem with the Frankie Edgar fight. You know, I thought it was a great fight. You know, listen, I have a lot of respect for Frankie Edgar for not cutting weight, but if you don't cut weight and you get beat by a bigger guy, you shouldn't be complaining about it. I mean, you just have to respect. I mean, you just have to respect what the game is. You know.
Oh, by the way, is an asterisk to that? You know, just Dana White, you know, really trying to get Frankie to go down in weight against his will, offering him up a title shot, and you know, it's almost not in a threatening manner or anything, but it's just like, you know, Frankie deserves to stay wherever he wants right now and see how he does.
This is the thing with Frankie Edgar. I really like Frankie Edgar because he doesn't cut weight. But you got to look at why Frankie Edgar doesn't cut weight. Frankie Edgar doesn't cut weight because he feels he's a better fighter not cutting weight. He feels he's a better fighter not putting his body through the weight-cutting process. So, in order to go to 145, Frankie Edgar would have to do a serious weight cut. He would have to do a weight cut, he would have to weigh in, he would have to rehydrate, and he doesn't feel that he would be as good a fighter after putting his body through that. That's why he doesn't cut weight. And, you know, the question remains, I mean, obviously this is just how it's done. You know, I'm not going to go on a big weight-cutting rampage here, but this is just how it's done. If I were a fighter, personally, I would not cut weight. Number one, because I don't really know how, and I don't want to learn, and I don't want to put my body through all of that. And number two, I don't want to say I've done weight cutting or anything like that, not like traditional weight cutting, but sometimes I feel, okay, I'm going to cut some carbs here, I'm going to drop a little bit of weight, I'm going to get cut up, and I can notice a serious difference in my training when I start doing that cut. If I tried to cut 10 pounds, no way I'd be able to train to the level that I can train right now. And so I wouldn't cut weight. So I'd go in there at, I guess I'd be 145, because I'm 144 right now. I'd go in there, I'd fight at 145. And you know what? If the guy I was fighting cut from 160 and rehydrated back to 160, I'm not really going to complain about that, because that's the game, you know? I don't really have a lot of respect for the guys that do all that cutting, but I'm not going to complain about it if it happens. I don't think that Frankie Edgar should have to cut weight if he doesn't want to. He thinks he's a better fighter without cutting weight, and that's great. Good for him. But he also can't complain if the guys he's fighting are guys that are 20 pounds heavier in the cage, because that's the game.
And you know what Frankie got out of this? He got out of it a really cool commercial with a tiger for Fox. I thought that was really nice. So see, there you go. You don't have to cut weight to have a great commercial with a hot chick and a tiger.
Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. As I'm doing this show, I am not, unfortunately, simultaneously watching the ROHI pay-per-view. But it is going on as we speak, GoFightLive.tv. I believe the replay airs at 8 o'clock p.m. The show is only $10.99. Actually, it's $9.99. It's a $10 pay-per-view to celebrate the 10th anniversary of ROH, and they want to get people giving it a shot. They're discounting the price. I, honest to God, don't think they should bother. You know, if you're going to get the ROHI pay-per-view, you're going to pay $14 or $19 or whatever it is. You may as well make the money off of it. But they're giving it to everybody for $10, so you might want to check that out. If you've got a Roku box, you can watch it on your television. Obviously, you can watch it online, GoFightLive.tv. And you can also watch it now on your iPhone or your iPad. If you've got an iPad, go to GoFightLive.tv, and you can watch the ROHI pay-per-view replay there as well. So as noted, 8 o'clock p.m. replay for the show. Actually, it might be 11 o'clock p.m. I'm not sure. Go to GoFightLive.tv and check it out. Obviously, you've missed the live airing. But always fun shows. They're very inexpensive. You're obviously going to get your $9.99 worth. It's hard not to with the talent on the ROH shows. But they're building up for their next series of iPay-per-views coming up on WrestleMania weekend. I'm going to be down there in Miami for those shows. And a lot of big events coming up that weekend in Miami, Mike.
Oh, yeah, Dragon Gate, the whole nine yards. I'm really excited to see Lance Storm coming back to face off against Mike Bennett. And I wonder if there's going to be some sort of tag where you could team up with Lance and Mike could team up with Maria.
I just told him not to turn his back on me in the crowd.
Turning his back on you?
Yeah, I may jump the rail and go after him.
Revenge.
That's right. He keeps challenging me because he wants his win back.
Well, you know, it was because of the mask last time. It screwed up his vision. I think that's what he's complaining about, and you took advantage of that.
I didn't tell him to wear a mask. It was his idea. That's not my fault. All right, everybody. We're going to head to a break. We shall be back in just a moment with Hour 2 after the top of the hour news break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. Spent the first hour talking mixed martial arts, Tate versus Rousey, UFC on FX, and more. Here in the second hour, we're going to talk pro wrestling. And Mike, before we kick it off with Rock versus Cena, want your thoughts on a very sad story, the passing of Doug Furness, huge star in Japan in the mid-90s, went to WWE, Furness and LaFon. Thoughts on his passing?
Yeah, really sad. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, he had retired however long it was ago now, and was one of those guys when he left the business, he was completely done with the business. He was gone, and so I hadn't heard much from him, and it was kind of a surprise yesterday when it was announced that he had passed away at the age of 50. Apparently he was passed away in his sleep. He was suffering from Parkinson's disease, and maybe he didn't want people to see him or whatever the reason was, but he had kind of really dropped off the scene. And if you'd only seen him in the WWF with Furness and LaFon, you don't really get the whole story. You knew he was a big, strong, powerful guy who was a hell of an athlete, and the fact he could hit a beautiful drop kick and do those sorts of things. But you know, his career in Japan was part of the K&M Express, with LaFon's name being Crowfat. They had to great matches. In fact, the 1992 match of the year for the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards was the K&M Express against the team Footloose, Fuyuki and Toshiaki Kawada. And, you know, when it came to DiBiase and Hansen and Gordy and Williams and that level of tag team, they weren't at it. You know, they were kind of like the Fantastics to those teams, Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express and Road Warriors in that time, but they did have great, great matches, and he was an incredible athlete, and he holds records to this day at the University of Tennessee in the squat and in the deadlift that have never been broken. He was a legitimate, incredible, powerful athlete and a huge, not a huge star in Japan, but a very big star. And do yourself a favor, if you haven't seen him, watch some of those matches from Japan, because if you only saw him in the WWF, you didn't get the whole story.
Up on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com right now, so check those videos out. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We got a lot of stuff to talk about here today. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. On Monday, Mike, we had the big showdown, The Rock and John Cena. We'll have another showdown coming up tomorrow on Raw. But last week, it was booked for John Cena to get the better of it. And how did he? Well, Rock came out and did a long promo defending himself from the accusations that John Cena had made regarding the fact that he left and didn't come back for a long time. And then when he did return and say he was back forever, I guess he said, I'm here and I'm not leaving. Forget the exact term he used. But in fact, he did leave. And John Cena very upset about that, so Rock defended himself, talking about how he had a life elsewhere. And it built to a spot where John Cena supposedly, I guess they were trying to push it as something that was off script, noted that Rock had written crib notes on his wrist. And boy, did that get people talking all night. Rock made it look like he was thrown off his game. He is an actor, everybody. And I guess really by about Wednesday, everybody had kind of forgotten about it. Wasn't a big deal. But certainly there were a lot of people talking that night. And what did you think about the notes on the wrist, Mike?
I thought it was great, and I thought you're coming down a little bit too hard on it. I'm in the camp that enjoyed it because of Rock. People getting so excited about it, you know, forgetting about the fact that there is a reason that Disney gives Rock millions of dollars to be an actor. I mean, he played that incredibly well. And, you know, the thing I liked about it the most and why I think it works and why I think the fact that it was, yeah, I understand what you're going to say as far as it is a dumb way to get there as far as the line goes. Like, wow, he called out, you know, notes on his arm. Ooh. But I think it's the fact that Cena showed cojones where, again, when he did it with Del Rio, when he did it beating up Kane, people respond to him that way. Him whining about the fact that The Rock went away, people don't want to see that. In Miami, he's going to get booed anyway. But, you know, the best way you can go into this with trying to get people on Cena's side is not being a superhero who takes Zack Ryder's girl who ends up being evil and fused with Kane. It's him just going out there and punching somebody in the face. It's not really that difficult.
Yeah, I thought Cena was great. I mean, it was the best Cena we've seen in a long time. I just was laughing at this idea that, oh my God, these crib notes. I can't believe he said that. Rock must be irate. It must be a shoot. I was like, listen, the crib notes was the key to the entire promo. Obviously, this was planned. I mean, why? The whole idea was Rock got really, really upset and flustered by John Cena. And if you take out the line about crib notes in the promo, what do you have? You have John Cena coming out and saying, I'm going to beat you up at WrestleMania. Why would that throw Rock off of his game? The only thing in that entire promo that would throw Rock off his game is the revelation that the great promo man, The Rock, in fact, needed notes. So the entire thing, I was laughing uproariously all night at people. Oh my God, I can't believe you said that. Oh my God, The Rock's going to be mad. That's the whole idea. You're supposed to believe they really don't like each other, that they're saying things that aren't supposed to be said. And that was a good one, and the effectiveness of it is because we see a lot of promos where guys say things that supposedly they're not supposed to say. If you go back to the CM Punk promo before Money in the Bank last year, he said a lot of things that he supposedly wasn't supposed to say. Unfortunately, they killed the gimmick when they had him come out that one day and have him announce that he was, I'm the guy that says things that he's not supposed to say. Right then, all of a sudden, it's a gimmick. The strength of this one was, it was one line, it was a throwaway line, they said it and got it over with and they moved on, and that's why people cared, because they really played it up like something that he wasn't supposed to say, as opposed to turning into a gimmick of saying things that they're not supposed to say. So anyway, said a lot of words about a simple fact. They made people believe on Monday night. That's the key. Mike, are you there?
Oh, yes. Sorry. I didn't know that's where you were ending. But, yeah, you know what Rock should have done, too, after that was just, you know, after some of the reaction had come out from people and the way that a lot of people had responded to it, he should have just, you know, if anybody ever had the guts to be one of those people that said, Rock is taking somebody's place on the card, why does he come in here and do this, and he's not even working, where he just has to walk back and look at everybody and go, does anyone have anything to say? Because, again, him acting like he stumbled over the fact, you know, that very little bit. That promo was, what, 12 minutes or whatever it was? You know, by the time Cena got in there, and it was just one little thing that was said and his reaction and Cena walking off that flipped the crowd and that, you know, actually got a little bit more interest into this thing.
I like the thought that what I just said right there was so profound that you were struck dumb.
Well, that it doesn't take much.
It was a great promo. I thought they were both very good. Some people thought Rock was no good, but I thought Rock was very good. Part of the key of being a great promo is have the people in the palm of your hands, even if you don't actually say anything. I've seen a lot of great promo guys over the years that people were going nuts for them, but if you actually listen to what they're saying, they're not saying anything. That's the magic. Get the people to care about you. And The Rock did that on Monday night. And John Cena got people to care about him as well. And the other funny thing about those crib notes was, I find it funny because one of the big complaints nowadays is that everyone has scripted promos. And guys should instead just be given bullet points and just go out there and talk. So Rock actually had bullet points on his hand, and this was a scandal. I don't know. He talked for 18 minutes, too, for crying out loud. I need crib notes for 18-minute speeches. I got them right here.
And look, nobody can really complain because, look, it's WrestleMania season, and you got the best of promos on Monday night. The show was bookended with great promos because you had Jericho and Punk out there doing the traditional pro wrestling promo. I'm going to kick your ass. No, I'm going to kick your ass because I think I'm the best. No, I'm the best. You're stealing it from me. Go back and forth. Boom, we're going to settle this thing. And then you got the sports entertainment promo at the end, you know, between the two big megastars. So, I mean, no one can really complain with Monday night as far as the mouths go because Jericho and Punk really got that thing off to a good start.
Yes, they did. A lot of great promos leading up to WrestleMania. What are your feelings so far as to how this is going to do on pay-per-view? Vince McMahon is predicting, are you ready for this? 1.4 million buys.
Worldwide?
Mm-hmm.
A million.
Definitely not domestic, that's for sure.
That's, yeah. I mean, it's going to do really well. I think it's going to do better than everybody thinks it is. But again, my problem is never with WrestleMania because you can run the entire year off WrestleMania if you cut all the other corners. So my problem isn't going to be with what that weekend is going to be about because of the Hall of Fame and everything else that goes into it. But it's going to be what they do after that, and I just think with the position that they're in, even though everyone's going to get excited now leading into WrestleMania, until they change something and until they do something, you know, they're usually dead-assed after that until they have the big summer blockbuster, you know, angle that they do, whether it be Punk, whether it's blowing Vince up or any of that sort of stuff, where WrestleMania is going to look artificially high and it's going to make that quarter look artificially high. But right after that, it's going to end up barreling out again. So I think it's going to do a great number. I think it's going to far surprise people. I don't think it'll do 1.4 million, but it's going to be way up there and be a surprise. But it's frankly what they do after that, which is the biggest deal.
I don't know if I'd use the term artificially high. I just kind of feel that we're moving to a place in this history of wrestling where WWE does giant business for WrestleMania every year, and then they do average to poor business the rest of the year, and then they build up that WrestleMania again. I mean, if you look at their wrestling operations for 2000 and I guess it'd be 2011, they were profitable in wrestling operations as a result of, shock of all shocks, WrestleMania and Survivor Series. So, I think that this year is probably going to be pretty much the same. WrestleMania this year, I think without question, is going to be the biggest money wrestling event of all time. We're talking the 80s, the boom period. There's never been a show in the history of wrestling that's going to make more money than WrestleMania this year. And that's going to carry them through the rest of the year. And then the whole game is, okay, well, what are we going to do for next year's WrestleMania? It used to be like we would always say, man, they always do WrestleMania. They don't have a plan for Backlash. You know, they don't care about Backlash. The plan is do a huge WrestleMania, and then what do we have for next year's WrestleMania? Are we going to bring in Steve Austin for a match? Are we going to have Rock come back for a match? What are we going to do next year to have our gigantic pay-per-view that is going to carry us through the rest of the year? We'll talk more about that after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 45 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, plus all of our Sports Byline USA affiliates. We were talking about Rock versus Cena. Any other thoughts on Raw Monday night before we move on?
Well, I actually wanted something that you had said about, you know, the WrestleMania thing, and yeah, that's something they have been doing. And one thing, you know, up until this past year, they're usually really good at not screwing up WrestleMania, and they've, you know, for announcing this thing a year out, they really did not plan this thing out well. But you know, there's if that's what they want to do, fine. And I know they linked on to do more movies, which has been an incredible drain on their money. The network is obviously a fail and is not a surprise to anyone with half a brain that this was not going to go really well, especially the way they were trying to do it by the seat of their pants right off the bat. But somebody's got to say that there's going to be concern with not cultivating true wrestling fans who get into things like Punk and Jericho and who understand them, who want to be, you know, put into rapture by watching these shows. And it's becoming a situation where it's like, okay, see WrestleMania. And then in a couple months, hey, look, we're in your town. And it becomes like the Harlem Globetrotters. Well, okay, you might sell a bunch of merchandise that night or a couple of things that night, but you're not cultivating people that are going to be around. And, you know, you're on a slippery slope, because if that's all you're going to be, then, you know, it's how much wrestling will there actually be? And it's just, it's kind of a bizarre situation. And, you know, yeah, Jared, we're really lucky for WrestleMania this year. There's Jericho, there's Undertaker, there's Triple H, there's Rock. You know, there's guys who are back and are in a, you know, from that era that, of course, Triple H always talks about. But you know what? He's going to be responsible, because he's going to be the one that, whether this thing continues on or not. And it's kind of a scary situation with what kind of slippery slope they're on.
I went to SmackDown on Tuesday, and it's always funny to go to these live events because you kind of step inside the WWE bubble a little bit. I remember I went many years ago backstage at a WWE event, and it's kind of funny being back there because those of us here that write about wrestling and think about wrestling and we're big fans and we're looking at earnings reports and everything like that and business and everything, you go backstage at a WWE event and, like, I don't know, at least at the time, it was like a totally different world. Like, back there, it's, here's a show. The show's a big success. These guys are all stars. It's just kind of, I don't even really know how to explain it. Except that when you're there, you don't get the impression that things are down. You know, that without The Rock and everything like that, wrestling business, you don't see the signs that you see from looking at the annual report, for example. You know, I was there Tuesday, and it's like, you know, they curtained off the upper deck, but tons and tons of fans. And the fans were into the stars. There were a lot of guys they weren't into. But even the guys they weren't into, if they were having a good match, the fans were into the fact that they were having a good match. And you see people buying merchandise, and you see families there, and you just kind of, you get this impression that, like, man, this is a big, worldwide, successful organization. And it is! Don't get me wrong. They grossed $500 million last year, so it's not like they're going out of business anytime soon or anything like that. But, you know, when we look at, this angle didn't make sense, they didn't follow up with this storyline. And I'm not saying that all these things are good or that they're fine. I would really like for them to follow up storylines. I would really like for them to have long-term booking and long-term planning and everything like that. But when you go to these events, I mean, quite frankly, I was surrounded by people that had no idea what was going on. They didn't watch SmackDown. Wrestling was coming to town. It comes to town once a year. And they heard about it, and they bought tickets, and they brought their family. And they watched wrestling for 3 hours, and they went home, and they probably aren't going to watch it again regularly. Maybe they'll buy WrestleMania. But, I mean, the people surrounding me were asking such goofy questions. Like, they didn't know who certain people were. I mean, I can understand not knowing who the guys on NXT are, because the show's only on the internet. But you went to a SmackDown TV taping, and you had no idea who Justin Gabriel was? He's on the show every single week. Not a big star, but how can you not know who Justin Gabriel is?
Wait, that Nexus storyline was a big deal and made big impact at one point. Remember that?
Oh, sure did. And there's another guy who was like, does Rock wrestle all the time? And it's like, Rock wrestled one time in the last 7 years, dude. It was amazing. It's just like, they draw a big crowd of people that aren't interested in their product. It's an amazing thing. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of people there that are interested in the product, but there are a fair, perhaps even sizable number of people that are not interested in the product. It's amazing to me. But the fact of the matter is, when you're there, I mean, I can understand why people in WWE, they read stuff on the internet and they're like, just crying, complaining, blah, it means nothing. Who cares what these people think, blah, blah, blah. I can completely understand why they have that attitude. Because when you're there, it seems like more, I shouldn't say more than it really is. I can't really put into words what it's like when you're there as somebody who follows this business. I mean, sometimes I can look at certain indicators and go, man, you know, it's not good. I mean, this is not good that this number's down and this number's down. But when you actually go to the event and you're there and you see all the guys and you see all the fans and everybody's cheering and it looks so professional and you got this whole crew and they're changing the apron for this and that, it's like, you know, they're not thinking of any of this stuff. You know, especially, you know, sometimes you hear wrestlers saying goofy things. And you're like, why is this guy saying this goofy thing? He should know better. And really, it's like, you know, they don't know better. I remember that, I always remember people when they think like, you know, if you work for WWE, you know everything that's going on there. You know all the scoops. When in reality, that's not the case at all. You know, something big can go down with like Rock and his crib notes. And you could call 10 guys and you could go, what's the scoop with Rock and his crib notes? Was that a work or what was that? They have no idea. They have no idea what's going on. So it's a big, I guess the best way to put it is when you go to a live SmackDown event or a live WWE TV taping or especially WrestleMania, it's just a big, giant machine that just keeps going. And they got so many shows and they got so much stuff to do that they aren't thinking about a lot of the things that you and I and the listeners are thinking about. They're just a big machine that keeps trudging along. And depending on where you are in the company, you know, you may know a lot or you may know nothing at all. You know, it's just, I had a fun time at the show. It was a fun event. I took my wife. The only person she cares about is Santino. She had a great time. I was surrounded by families that had a great time. It was, you know, you can watch the show and pick apart certain things and that sort of deal. But the people that go to the events, they just go to see some pro wrestling. They go to see some dudes falling down. They go to see some guys yelling at each other. And a lot of them don't care about what's going on. They just go for the show. And it's a good show. So that's my review of the live SmackDown.
Hey, there was always a reason that when people would say, like, you know, list the three people who got the biggest reaction that night, the biggest pops, and the most boos. You know, people always used to be stunned that Hardcore Holly would always be like third when it came to biggest pops.
Or Kane in Mexico. Everyone's always talking about when you go to Mexico, Kane is just like ridiculously over, like second over, most over guy aside from Rey Mysterio. Nobody understands why. He just is.
It's one of those things that they don't exactly, you know, come down on him for any knowing any stuff that smart fans know and things have been reported and things like that. They just know that there's a guy who kicks ass and they're fine with that. It's just, you know, and that's, they're always going to have that. And WWE's going to be around forever. And again, nobody's going to cry for WWE making $500 million last year. But, you know, with that said, it's what, you know, their biggest demographic right now is still probably between 35 and 54. One of the reasons it's 35, it's because we are the ones that went through the two main boom periods of the 90s and of the 80s, and we have hung on and taken our kids to those shows and things like that. But the thing is, my son's more interested in the UFC than he is in WWE, and he's four. He's got action figures of GSP and things like that where if you start cultivating we're a big show, we come around once a year, we have a big event, it's on national TV, hey, look at us, and then the rest of the year you go to the side and you're just trucking along when things are in their down period and people aren't paying attention to you. I mean, how are you cultivating fans? And that's my only concern. Again, I believe they can do it. It's not like they're anywhere near the point where they're to push the panic button or anything like that. But I think it's an interesting sociology experiment to see, you know, what they continue to do because they're having a hell of a time trying to cultivate fans.
Well, I mean, they're as far as like cultivating hardcore fans or fans that are going to watch every show. Yeah, but it's very obvious why. It's like, you know, in order to become invested in a show, there have to be storylines. I mean, really, did a single person care about Sarah Kaufman versus Alexis Davis in a number one contenders fight for the for the Strikeforce 135-pound title. I know there's maybe a dozen people listening to this that did, and that's probably being generous. I know there were some hardcore fans that cared. But as far as the general public, did one single solitary non-hardcore fan care about that fight at all? No. Because there was absolutely no story behind Sarah Kaufman versus Alexis Davis, outside of the fact that Sarah Kaufman was promised a title shot and Rousey leapfrogged her. But did people care about Ronda Rousey and Miesha Tate? Yes, tons of them. Not only tons of casual fans, but probably three-quarters of the WWE locker room watched that show last night. I heard about it all night long. They were so into that fight and that storyline, because that fight had a great storyline. In order to get people invested in your product, you've got to have interesting characters and great storylines. And when you mix up the storylines and you change finishes and you change direction and you change everything because the guy at the very tippy top keeps changing his mind, well, it's kind of hard to get invested in that. And that's why you have far fewer hardcore invested fans than you did at any other point, probably in the entire history of pro wrestling. I got a lot more to say about this. I'm sure you do as well. We'll talk about this when we come back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Don't forget, if you love this show and you only get to hear it once per week, you could be hearing this show every single day. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Every day we do audio shows, sometimes as many as 3 to 4 shows every single day. All of the same audio quality you're listening to right now. They're MP3s. Download them to your iPod, iPad, iPhone, Android, whatever your listening device of choice. Listen to them on the road. Listen to them at the gym. Listen to them while working out. Listen to them before bed. Many people do. Thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio in the archives. Every show we've done dating back to 2005, plus, as noted, brand new shows every single day. You'll never run out of audio. If you love this show, give it a shot. It's $10.99 a month. You can try it for 1 month, $11. If you don't like it, never sign up again. But I guarantee, I've said this a million times, it's a Vince McMahon guarantee. I guarantee that if you love this show, you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. What did you think of that, Mike?
That was more Foghorn Leghorn than it Vince McMahon there.
Well, I can't. My usual Vince McMahon impersonation begins with a swear word, so I really couldn't do that for that particular plug right there. But
them boys like.
Sure. Anyway, we're talking about Raw and SmackDown and WWE and just wrestling fans in general. We're talking about it before the break. I went to the SmackDown tapings on Tuesday night. Saw a lot of fans that just had no idea what was going on. They didn't know who people were. They didn't know the storylines. But wrestling came to town, so they showed up. And I think that that's going to happen for many, 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 many more years. You know, Mike, even if, quite frankly, even if you didn't watch Raw and SmackDown every single week, you've been a wrestling fan for life. And you've got a little bugger. And that guy's going to be 8, 9 years old. And you're going to go, WWE's coming to town. I'm going to take him to town. I'm going to take him to the show. And you guys are going to go. You're going to have a good time. He'll probably never watch it again. And maybe the next time they come to town, you'll take him again. That's wrestling fans nowadays, you know?
Yeah, but Brian, and I'm one of those fans that's going to continue to do it, but we just saw it this week with Alex Marvez voluntarily, and yes, he's got a lot of other stuff going on, being at the NFL Writers Association, being on Sirius and things like that, where he's dropping his wrestling column. There's a lot of people who have completely tuned out or have gotten out of it. And yes, a lot of them go back a lot because they're the same. You know, a lot of times you'll get the guys, I used to watch it back in Junkyard Dog's day and things like that, where, you know, they may come back. But there's a lot of kids. And hey, Dave Meltzer's kid says it all the time. Hey, do you want to go see wrestling? No. You know, make it to the point where Avery, you want to go see wrestling? No, there's a Strikeforce show that night, or there's a UFC show that night. I'd rather go see that. I mean, that's where. And again, I'm not trying to like throw WWE under a bus here, but when you look at how developmental is, and again, Undertaker, Rock, Triple H, Jericho, they all came from a time where you rode in cars. There were things of how you worked things out and how you got better and things like that where, you know, you learn things. And that's gone and starting to go away. You have guys that are critical of The Rock coming back and not you know, completely missing the point. So that's a bad sign. You just things like that, where when you add them all up, you do have to say, hey, if these things keep happening and you're not careful, you are in the, and again, all they need is WrestleMania. They run the whole year off of WrestleMania. But the way they blow money with the movies, with the networks and things like that, hey, it's just, you better be careful. Again, they don't have that much to worry about because they can change these things at any time. And that's the troubling part is you shake your head sometimes at what they do because it's so easily fixable. You don't understand why they make these dumb decisions like following TNA and the theme pay-per-views and doing stupid things like that and having, you know, huge storylines like the Raw GM just completely go nowhere. I mean, it hurts your credibility. And yes, people always go, there's always somebody out there that's always going to go see wrestling. I mean, wrestling was in the Bible, for Christ's sakes, literally. So, you know, it's always going to be there, but it's just, it's amazing to me as a wrestling fan, again, in that age range where that's where the cutoff is. 35 seems to be the passionate fan cutoff, and then after that, what are you besides a Globetrotter-type touring company?
Here's my thoughts on this. I think that, like, the worst thing that a person can do in terms of trying to predict where things are going is to extrapolate the present day into the future. And I just remember in 2002, 2003, 2004, after WCW died and WWE botched the invasion, there was this great feeling that, my God, there may not be a business in 10 years. And here we are almost 10 years later, and the business is just fine. And realistically, yeah, there are a lot of warning signs. My wife teaches a kids' jiu-jitsu class and got probably 20 kids between the ages of 7 and 11 in that class. Not a single one for a single moment has ever mentioned professional wrestling or anybody in it. They don't care about wrestling. They don't care about John Cena. They don't care at all. And quite frankly, yes, it is a jiu-jitsu class, everything like that, but you'd think there'd be some crossover. I mean, obviously some of those kids watch some MMA. I know they do. They talk about it, but they never, ever, ever talk about wrestling. At the same time, a buddy of mine who has not watched wrestling in years, he remembers guys like the Junkyard Dog. I said, hey, you know, WWE's coming to town. You get a ticket for $20. You want to go with us? He's like, yeah, sure, why not? And he went. He had a great time. Thought the show was great. Is he going to watch it Monday? No. He's probably not going to ever watch it on TV ever again. But the next time they come to town, he may go. And the reality of the situation, as we have learned from pro wrestling and mixed martial arts companies like Pride, everything like that, here's the reality. It would take one big scandal in UFC and one guy catching fire in WWE, and this entire business could turn around. Is that likely anytime soon? I don't know. I can't predict the future. But that's all it would take. I mean, in 10 years, WWE could be on fire, and UFC could be struggling to get an outlet with the Fox deal up. Is that likely? Probably not. But it could happen. The one thing about the future is you just don't know what's going to happen, and little things can snowball really, really fast. And the fact that pro wrestling has been an art form in this country since, well, as you noted, there's been wrestling since, I'm sure, long before the Bible. There has been wrestling in this country since the 1880s. There's always going to be pro wrestling in this country. And I think pro wrestling is always going to be, I don't want to say a big deal, but there's always going to be a big-time pro wrestling company running shows in this country. I firmly believe that. Because there will always be people that want to see comic book-looking characters cutting promos on each other and beating each other up, whether real or fake. And I think that mixed martial arts is fine as well for a long time. But I know there are signs. I know there are things that look bad. But little kids are fickle, you know? It takes one guy to get over. It takes one guy to do something really cool, and all the kids are going to want to follow that guy. I don't know who that guy is, but you got to think about, you know, John Cena. He was almost fired years ago until he was rapping on a bus and Stephanie McMahon heard him. And where would this business be had John Cena been fired? I don't know. Maybe he'd be bigger, maybe he'd be smaller. But there may be a guy rapping on a bus somewhere, and he gets one shot, and all of a sudden we've got a new Stone Cold Steve Austin. You just never know.
That absolutely, and hopefully that would be more the case. It's just, you know, when you do look at things also like the Rock and Jericho back, numbers don't move. You know, can you imagine, let's just say Rawford goes in, what is it, about 3-1 right now. Let's just say it falls to like a 3, then goes to like a 2-5. Let's just say they go 2-5 for a whole year, and again, I know that's, you know, USA's got all these powerful shows, first-run shows, and because, you know, WWE hasn't made stars, Undertaker's not going to be there forever. Obviously, he won't be there again until, you know, WrestleMania, and then that's going to be it. And guys like Jericho and Austin and Rock, they don't come back. But you have not created any stars. I mean, again, it's not, they're not I think maybe that's what bothers me more than anything, too, is just you're not maximizing your money, and them going in to go with movies again, and the fact that they're not building stars, everybody gets up to a point and they bonk their heads. I mean, I hope when Alberto Del Rio comes back, he's got a jetpack attached to him, you know, because they softened Punk where he just became a WWE character. Great for CM Punk.
Let me just throw in really quickly, Alberto Del Rio, when he comes back after last night, they're already talking about pushing his arm bar. I'm not kidding.
Is he going to have a senorita now with him, too, that they could have to take shots at Rousey?
He may, but...
Eve, that would be fine. Eve, perfect, because she can actually do an arm bar.
That's right. That's right. They're going to be pushing Alberto Del Rio's arm bar after last night. So anyway, go on.
No, I just, you know, again, I think I'm just frustrated. And, again, being a longtime wrestling fan and seeing so many people who were so passionate about it and that have actually sway in other communities, whether it be MMA or in journalism or in other aspects, just completely kind of going out of it, it's just, to me, going to be really interesting. And, again, even though it only takes one thing to fire around a wrestling company, when they've had some things in their hand that had one big thing that they fired up, whether it be Nexus or whether it be CM Punk or whatever it is, and they keep throwing water on it, at some point, it's just, again, it's their way of doing business now, but the way they throw away money in other arenas, and again, this network thing is not going to go away either, it's just, it makes you scratch your head. I mean, the Motley Fool used to always say WWE was a lock of a buy because of the dividend and all that sort of stuff, and, you know, it's not anymore, and it hasn't been for quite some time, so... Again, even though those little things, they only need one thing to explode and they're back on top again, the little things that you do can end up, you know, crumpling you and hurting you down the line.
That's true. And, you know, it could take one thing to bring down WWE. The network could just drain them of all their money and be a huge bust. Who knows? The movie division's been a bust. I did feel better when Vince said, listen, we're going to try this Fox thing. If it don't work, we're done with movies. He knows, I presume. You know, they got smart people running the business end. That's the key. And you can talk all you want about storylines and character development and everything like that, but you need smart people running the business end. And that's why WWE is going to last long into the future, even if it's a product that nobody cares about and they drive off every single current fan that they have right now, which, by the way, would be impossible. I'd also like to note, as far as... you know, looking at history and extrapolating forward, can you imagine in 2002 when Pride ran the Tokyo National Stadium and packed, like, I can't remember the real number, but they claim like 95,000 or something like that. It was, you know, probably 70, 80,000 or whatever it was. Ridiculously big number. Can you imagine when that show was over that day, somebody coming up to you and saying, you do know in 5 years this company's dead. You'd be like, oh, really, fool? But 5 years... dead. Company was dead. So, takes one thing, both positive and negative. It could take one thing to bring the whole thing down. And it can also take one thing to turn the entire deal around. You know, we've watched UFC since signing the Fox deal. They've done some decent pay-per-view numbers. Some of these numbers have been bigger than expected. Quite a bit bigger than expected. Is that because of the added viewership of Fox? All those people tuning into those free Fox shows, you know, that Fox deal could end up being something that really turns around the business. At the same time, you know, we'll see what happens on Friday when Ultimate Fighter goes live and it's head-to-head with SmackDown and Bellator soon, and not to mention being on a Friday night when your 18 to 34-year-old audience is probably wanting to go out. You know, a lot of things. We'll see how that show does. I think it's going to do all right, but... it's on an interesting day. We've been talking for years about how SmackDown's on a bad day. And now Ultimate Fighter going head-to-head on that same bad day, targeting an audience that isn't probably going to be in at night. So it's going to be interesting to follow the next couple of years, but the one thing about the future is you cannot predict it. No one can.
And one thing about smart people when it comes to WWE, too, Michelle Wilson, their chief marketing officer, is going to be recognized as one of the women to watch by the Multichannel News' 2012 Wonder Women, where they do this throughout media and things like that. So they do actually have great people working for them.
Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at our website, WrestlingObserver.com. Head over there for all the news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tomorrow is Raw. The return of Shawn Michaels. Undertaker was scheduled to be on the show, but he's been pulled. So apparently tomorrow the storyline will be built around Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and the question of whether Shawn Michaels is better than Triple H, which, quite frankly, he was. But we'll see what they have to say about that tomorrow. And Rock is back as well. So probably another Rock-Cena confrontation. We didn't talk about it on the show, but the Rock-Cena confrontation on Monday went so long, 22 minutes past the top of the hour, that people actually tuned out of it, which had people absolutely baffled that people had tuned out when John Cena came out to confront The Rock. But hey, people are creatures of habit. They have other things they want to watch. They shut it off. Maybe their DVRs kicked out. Maybe they fell asleep. I don't know. I guess that wouldn't affect the ratings one way or the other, but a lot of people interested in that rating. The reality is ratings rarely correlate to pay-per-view buy rates. You know, the rating wasn't great, but at the same time, there were 5 million people watching that show on Monday night. And if you get 20% of those people to buy your pay-per-view, then you're looking at an easy million buys in the U.S. So it's all about getting the people to watch your show to buy, something TNA has failed at many times. But again,
0.04.
What was that?
0.04.
0.04. That's right. But Raw is back tomorrow, everybody, and you looking forward to that show, Mike?
Yes, I am.
What do you think is going to be the highlight, Rock and Cena or Shawn and Triple H?
I am actually going to go with Shawn and Triple H, actually steal it for tomorrow night.
And actually, Undertaker and Triple H stole the rating from Rock and Cena a couple of weeks ago, so people are into that storyline. We're going to head out of here, everybody. Check out WrestlingObserver.com for daily radio shows. We got free shows up there as well, so go up there and check it out. We'll be back next week with more. Thanks, everybody. Mike, Sports Byline, all the listeners. We'll talk to you again after a while.